Welcome to tonight's episode of the Remso Martinez Experience. Before we get started, I want to go ahead and give a shout out to some of this episode's sponsors. From self-publishing to podcasting and passive income development, I offer ongoing self-development courses at Champion Pundit Academy, as well as one-on-one private consultations to take you from zero to hero in no time. Learn more at championpunditacademy.com. That's championpunditacademy.com. And are you looking for a short but laugh-out-loud reading experience that combines everything you love about life and also everything you hate about politics? Well, learn about the journey of yours truly as I venture to learn more about the wild and wacky world of libertarians, you know, the ones that your parents probably warned you about. You can grab a print or Kindle e-reader copy of my book, Stay Away from the Libertarians, today on Amazon and Barnes & Noble Online. That's Stay Away from the Libertarians, available today on Amazon and Barnes & Noble Online. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the one, the only, brand new, completely, right off the assembly line, Remso Martinez Experience. I'm your host, Remso W. Martinez. Thank you all for tuning in. This is our inaugural episode. For some of you coming in, you might be like, Remso, what's with the rebrand? I've been listening to you for a while. Now you're changing things up. I don't like change. That's not how we dig. But, you know, as people grow, that's a sign of change. They're evolving as people. They're going from disgusting caterpillars that are eating crap and, you know, getting stepped on by people like me into giant butterflies, which then hit windshields and create, you know, giant Picassos on my, you know, car windshield that caused me to almost get into car accidents. But, you know, that's a whole different thing. We're changing. We're evolving. We're growing, baby. And I hope you're doing well. For those of you that don't know me, I'm author and journalist Remso W. Martinez. Welcome. Welcome. For those of you that have been around for a while, I'll just go ahead and get all of you up in one swoop. This is about intentional living. This is about finding the things that keep us going. It's about understanding the human condition in the wild and wacky world we live in. Is time all happening at once? Are there multiple dimensions? Why do people do what they do? We'll be covering a whole bunch of crazy questions, but understanding the meaning of life is one of those, because life is a beautiful thing. Over the past year, you know, I've had a giant amount of growth as a person, you know, eat, pray, love, that type of thing, learned to meditate, started cooking my own meals. It's a really weird thing, but, you know, for a millennial, that's called progress. So you're welcome, society. I'm paying my taxes like a good American. On today's inaugural episode, I want to go ahead and I want to talk about change. I want to talk about development. And when you know, you find a passion project, when you find something that gives you meaning, that you can go ahead and, you know, just completely pour yourself into and create something beautiful. But, you know, I'd be a bit of a narcissist if I was talking about myself. I want to go ahead and bring on a man that I really do admire. This person has served our country, and he went to one of the most god-awful places on earth, and he used his time to, you know, to meditate, to think about the things he was passionate about, and he created something beautiful. He went on to probably, he's going to be one of the top country singers that's going to hit up your neighborhood one of these days. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking to country singer and a dear friend of mine, Matt Conroy. Matt, thanks for joining the show, man.
Hey, Remso. Thanks for having me, buddy.
So I see you're sporting a beard. Is it just a depression, or is it just something that country singers usually bring up? Because I'm seeing a bit of a trend here.
Well, I'm rocking a real beard. The modern country trend is more to have the 5 o'clock shadow, you know, the scruff, to make it look like you've been working in the field all day and everything. But really, it's just a product of being off active duty now and getting ready to start this next chapter. And I can only keep it for like another month, because then my reserve duty starts and I got to take it off once a month. So
you might as well enjoy it while you got it.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm really kind of growing it out now and just loving it.
So how long have you been back in the States? I know you returned from Afghanistan this year. Mm-hmm. Well, when did you get back?
We got back right at the beginning of June, this past June. We got back to Alaska. And then I was in Alaska for about another, what it would have been, about 4 months And then I moved down to the lower 48, and I am living in just outside of Charlotte, North Carolina now.
So you missed seasons, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. It was summer and winter, and then this year I actually got a little bit of taste of fall, so that was kind of nice.
Well, you know, the lower 48 does have something to speak for itself. So, Matt, for people that might not know a little bit about you, how about you just tell the audience a little bit of your background? And, you know, I've known you for a little while now, and the way I've seen you grow as a person, I mean, you know, just kind of looking at you right now, the audience can't see you, but you look older. And I'm not just saying, like, you know, physically older, because, you know, you've got some bags under your eyes, pal. I think I see a gray sticking out, but you seem
like...
Yeah,
that's what the army does to you after.
And you look like a much older soul. So I'm really excited to, you know, hear what you're going to tell us. So just tell the audience a little bit of your background. Where are you from? How'd you get started? And how did you end up, you know, from everything you were doing to now out in North Carolina trying to make a career in music?
Yeah, definitely. So I was born and grew up in a little town just south of Rochester, New York. It was a rural upbringing. I came from a town of about 3,000 people and grew up in Western New York and was not really musically inclined, I guess to say, from the beginning. My parents made me play trombone growing up.
That's the makings of a country star, you know. So
yeah, right.
Kid in New York playing the trombone.
Yeah, every country star gets their start playing trombone. my parents made me start playing trombone in like fourth grade, and I continued trombone through senior year because they thought it was important that I have some kind of musical influence. But I kind of had this notion shoved down my throat my entire childhood that we are not artistic people. My family is not artistic. We are not singers. We are not drawers. We are not creators. You know, we just show up, we do what we have to do, and we go home. And then my senior year of high school, I was walking around the auditorium after band practice, and I was singing a Christmas carol. It was right around Christmas. I was singing a Christmas carol in like a real deep bass registry, just messing around. And the theater director happened to be in the room, and he heard me, and he said, "Why aren't you trying out for the spring musical?" And I said, "Well, Mr. Boone, because I can't sing. I don't know the first thing about singing or acting." He's like, I hear a voice right there. And so, so I auditioned for that spring musical, and I got one of the leads. We were doing Sweeney Todd, and I got one of the lead roles in Sweeney Todd my spring semester of senior year. So that was really cool, and that was like my first introduction to using my voice. And from there, that was when I started to develop an interest in country music. And at that time, this was kind of the mid to late 2000s, and bro country was really kind of making its rise.
What do you classify as bro country? Because apparently, according to my girlfriend, I like bro country, and I don't understand that, because I like, you know, I like Brad Paisley and I like Trace Adkins, but she saw Florida Georgia Line on my playlist and she's like, "Oh, that's bro country." And I'm like,
"That's one." Yeah, Florida Georgia Line is 100% bro country. You know, and they would classify themselves as contemporary country, and we could do an entire podcast about the discrepancies between the different subgenres of country and which ones are good and maintaining the integrity of the genre and everything like that. We could spend hours discussing that. So I'll try
and focus back up. But bro country, it seems like that's a contentious issue. It's like the Nickelback of our era.
Oh my God, it's incredibly contentious right now, especially for people who are invested in the genre. It's incredibly contentious, and it's incredibly touchy.
Well, I don't want to get stabbed by a listener as I leave my house, so let's get back to it. You discovered that you can actually sing. Yep. You're in this musical, and you know what? Mm-hmm. What came after that? What made you want to keep going?
So after that, I went to college at Niagara University, about 4 miles north of Niagara Falls, New York. And it was my sophomore year where I bought my first guitar. I started teaching myself how to play, and
it was like, you just wanted to get
laid. Pretty much. Yeah. Okay. Honestly, you are not wrong. And I failed miserably every time. it started as, you know, trying to learn like Courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue by Toby Keith. You know, I was in ROTC. I was awash with, you know, young patriotism and everything like that. And so that's kind of how it started. I just wanted to learn how to play my favorite songs. And then twice a year, once in the fall semester, once in the spring semester, my school would host an open mic. And there was, you know, over like $1,000 in cash prizes and stuff like that. And every year while I was in college, every semester I performed. And every year, freshman, sophomore, junior, and the first half of senior year, I did covers. And then my spring semester of my senior year, I just said, you know what, I'm going to go all out with it. I'm going to write a song. I'm going to, you know, make like an homage to the last 4 years of my life. And I did. And I wrote my first song that I played in public. And it was just an homage to the last 4 years. And it had like references to like our favorite bars and, you know, people's houses and all this other stuff. And the audience loved it. I mean, they absolutely loved it. And it was kind of a ballad anthem. So it was a little bit sad. And I ended up winning the open mic that semester. And I went home with a couple hundred dollars in cash. That was pretty cool. And that's kind of where the bug got me. I started realizing, wow, I have a voice. I have something to say. And from there, it just became, you know, kind of a daily or a weekly grind. I would try and crank out drafts of songs and everything like that. I went to my basic officer course in Fort Sill, Oklahoma. And I started writing more, and it was right around 2015. It was in 2015, I believe it was in May, where an Army mentor of mine was killed in a Humvee accident on the New Jersey Turnpike. And I started to write one of the songs that's actually on this new album that I put together. And that kind of gives you an idea of how long some of these songs
and before I forget, that new album, which is available on iTunes, Google Play, you can even go to his website to purchase a physical copy if you want to be really awesome. That's Genesee County by Matt Conroy. You can go ahead and pick it up today. Once you pick it up on iTunes, do leave the review, because that really does help a lot of these independent artists that are really trying to develop an audience. Those reviews on iTunes really do help out. So go ahead and pick up Genesee County today on iTunes and Google Play. But, you know, Matt, I kind of want to pivot a little bit. You mentioned that incident really did struck a chord with you. I mean, I definitely understand what it is to lose somebody that's close to you. And, you know, the remarkable thing is that, you know, you came back from, you know, your time and as an active duty officer. And then immediately you kind of jumped into working on the album and everything else. Were you writing while you were deployed?
Yeah, I absolutely was. I think out of all of the tracks on this album, I think there were only two that were not written, in the 9 months that I was over in Afghanistan. You know, I made it a daily commitment every night after we were done working for the day and the night shift took over, to go to the chapel on our FOB and just write. And by the time I left Afghanistan, I actually had 16 or 18 songs written, and I had to narrow it down. And it was hard to narrow it down to 13. I probably could have narrowed it down further, but I didn't want to. Like I had this narrative that I wanted to tell, and 13 was a kind of the perfect number to kind of capture that.
As you were writing, did you have the intention of eventually, you know, playing this in front of people and turning it into an album, or was it kind of a form of therapy for you? Because, like, you know, I know many people that have gone over to, you know, Iraq and Afghanistan, and it's really funny the habits that soldiers pick up. I have a friend that learned how to code. I have another friend that actually earned his MBA while he was in Afghanistan. I was like, how did you have time to earn your master's degree? Mm-hmm. And then I've got you doing that. And, you know, I just look at how, you know, I handle stressful situations, and I self-medicate a lot. That's why I do a lot of writing. That's why, I write short stories, poems. I write a bunch of things that will never see the light of day. So what was your mindset as you were writing?
Wow, that's a great question. I definitely wanted to tell the story of kind of my early to mid 20s and convey a message of growth. I knew that I was going to make this album when I came back from Afghanistan, but I don't think I knew that I would make the drastic step of just getting out of the Army and pursuing the music. At this point, when I was writing, I knew I was going to get off active duty. I had already submitted my paperwork, but I did not think that I thought I was just going to go get a Joe job, you know, and do the music as a hobby until something happened. I did not think I would dive into it headfirst the way that I have. And so my mindset throughout the deployment while writing this thing was to capture this concept of growth. And you'll notice that all of the songs on this album hearken to a message of either personal growth or collective growth. And all of the songs kind of range from this individualist idea to this societal idea. And that's what I was going for.
And as I listened through the album, I mean, it's all very like I think the entire album's incredible. But, you know, just really listening to the lyrics, I find that when I do listen to most music, I don't really listen to the lyrics. I think the last, you know, just the last song I listened to, other than the tracks on your album where I really paid attention to the words we're using, were Life of Pablo by Kanye. And I never necessarily thought that Kanye West was the most, you know, introspective artist. But I mean, like the Life of Pablo album, yeah. And I'm not even much of a rap fan, but that really spoke to me. And as I was listening to your album, I listened to it with my girlfriend. And, mm-hmm. you know, the biggest thing that, you know, we kept picking up was, you know, this is like a very deep meditative experience. This is somebody that's really pulling a lot of themselves out, and they're trying to manifest this into words. So I'm just curious, do you think you would have been able to write these songs without Afghanistan, or do you think Afghanistan helped kind of change your attitude towards life? Obviously the employment environment had an effect.
Yeah, the deployment environment really just gave me a space to really focus. You know, there's no distractions when you're deployed. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like you wake up, you've got your daily routine, you go to work, you come back, and you're done. And, you know, between between lifting lots of weights and eating lots of food and advising Afghans, you don't really have much else. You know, and like my girlfriend was 8 hours behind me, and she was an officer at Fort Bragg. And so we're on two completely inverse schedules. We hardly spoke for the 9 months that I was over there. So I didn't have anything else. So the focus was really what helped me knock this out. I think if I were back in Alaska doing the day-to-day grind and having training events and having to adapt to the Army's active duty schedule, I probably wouldn't have been able to knock this out the way I did. So I don't think Afghanistan itself had a huge influence on the material, but it definitely afforded me the opportunity to just really crank it out and have 18 solid songs written in 9 months. I mean, that's pretty unique in and of itself.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I've heard this from other musicians and, you know, authors. I mean, that takes a long time just to get a couple songs out.
Yeah.
And you had an album plus.
Mm-hmm.
So that itself is remarkable. So I want to go ahead and fast forward a little bit. You come back from your deployment in June of 2018. At that point, had you decided I want to jump into music, or were you still thinking, okay, I'm back home, everything is kind of, you know, rushing to me, I should probably step back before I make this commitment? What was that like?
Coming back from Afghanistan was probably one of the most tumultuous times of my young life, and not because of anything that I experienced in Afghanistan or anything like that. I didn't come back with PTSD or anything. We didn't even see any kind of engagement, but it was really just the transition of coming back, starting to crank out this album, and then putting all of this pressure on myself, the pressure of getting out of the Army, the pressure of moving out of Alaska, the pressure of producing this album, and the pressure of moving forward with a new life with a person I deeply cared about. And I just put a lot of pressure on myself, and I actually I started to develop some problems with alcohol, and had to work through that with some pretty deliberate counseling and everything like that. So I'm sorry I started to deviate. What was the original question?
What was what was the process of becoming a full-time musician like?
Right, that's
right. As soon as you got back.
That's right. And so
you were answering it. You just got a bit lost there.
So I started to develop these problems with alcohol. I started going to counseling and working my way through it. You know, I come from a line of alcoholics, and it was something that I really, really had to work through. And I actually took my post-deployment leave, and I came back to the lower 48, and I was supposed to go to Asheville with my girlfriend to – you know, go look at houses and neighborhoods and stuff like that. And I ended up having to bail on it. And I went home. I went back to Rochester, and I spent the 2 or 3 weeks, however long I was home, talking with family. And, I went to a couple AA meetings, and it wasn't for me. And I worked through a lot of things there, you know, in the valley of the Genesee River. And I came to the realization that if I were ever going to do this, if I were ever going to look at myself in the mirror and say, I tried to be a country songwriter and recording artist, now would be the time.
You needed that time to reset.
Exactly. It's 100%. I knew that if I did not take this leap now, I never would. Because I would have to re-up in the Army, and then I would have another, you know, active duty commitment. I had a lot of money saved up from the deployment, so I had the money to finance the album and, you know, get out and do, you know, some part-time stuff and really, really focus on it. And it was just that, going home, resetting, talking with my family and some of my older relatives who have kind of like lived their lives, and some of them have done everything they wanted to do and others of them haven't. And I very much wanted to be part of that former group. You know, knowing I may not be successful, but at least I can look at myself in the mirror at the end of the day and say, yes, I went for it.
Absolutely. It's really a shame that most people don't realize that there were certain things in their lives they wanted to accomplish until it's too late.
Right.
Whether it's because of age, whether it's because of other responsibilities and commitments, or even just, you know, the financing of certain things. Like, you know, mm-hmm. you produced your own album. I self-published my own book, and you
right.
know, that was a lot of time and money. I had to get a part-time job just to, mm-hmm. you know, pay for a lot of the editing and other stuff. I mean, people don't understand
yeah.
that when you're doing a project like this, it's a real pain. But, you know, to kind of focus in on your family, so you obviously had this inclination towards music, especially, mm-hmm. you know, not just being a musician, but being an artist, writing your own songs. So it must not have been too much of a shock when you were telling people about this plan, but did, you know, how was the reaction you got from your friends and family? I mean, obviously they knew that this was something you cared about, but did they really understand how much of a commitment you wanted to go ahead and put towards things?
Well, and I think that's why I took such a long time to before I realized like that this was what I wanted to do, was because for a large part of my family, I didn't have the support to go out and just do it. You know, my mom and I went back and forth for a long time, and once in a while we still do. She couldn't believe that I wanted to walk away from the Army and do this. Like, she couldn't believe that I wanted to walk away from a pension and free healthcare and all of this stuff. And she was really upset.
Well, I mean, it's TRICARE. It's kind of shitty, so you're not missing.
Right, yeah. It's free, but you get what you pay for, right? Exactly.
You know, it's TRICARE, which is basically, I don't care.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, but my other relatives, you know, like I said, we're very supportive. A lot of them said, when I was your age, I wanted to do X, and I didn't. And I still look back on that, and I'm still frustrated with myself. And I just didn't. I don't want to be a part of that crowd. I don't want to be a part of that club. And that was kind of the influence that my family had. But since actually doing it, you know, now that I've actually done it and I'm in the fire right now, unequivocal support from everybody. Anybody I talk to is asking, how's the music going? What are you doing? Are you playing any gigs? You know, everyone in my family bought a copy of the album. And the support was, you know, was really great. And my Army family, even, you know, the people that I left behind up in Alaska, we had a release event and they were all incredibly supportive. They came and I think we must have sold, I don't know, 200 copies just in pre-orders. You know, like we did very well. And the outpouring of support once you actually commit to it is very, very, very remarkable. But you find that it's when you're kind of hemming and hawing that people are kind of like less likely to support you. The confidence you have in yourself plays a huge role.
It's never until you actually show them a product that people are really kind of like there with you. So, I mean, it's definitely that's so true. I mean, the process of writing, you know, the book for me itself, like it was very lonely because, you know, when people say, you know, and, you know, I live right outside of DC. So everyone is either trying to get at some point into media or they're trying to write a book. And these people have been writing the same book for 30 years. It's like, goddamn, just publish that thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah. So absolutely. As I was writing, I don't think anyone actually believed me. And then it wasn't until the book came out that people were like, oh, he's serious. And it wasn't until the first review was published that they were like, holy crap, I guess it's decent.
Right.
So no, I don't think many people, except outside of, you know, the entrepreneur and artist community, really understand that it's lonely.
Yeah.
It really is.
It absolutely is. And you have to be comfortable with yourself. And I think that was a huge part of my problem when I first got back from Alaska as well, was I was not comfortable with myself. I was not happy with myself. I didn't really care for myself. And I took that out on myself as a result. And, you know, my girlfriend tells me every day, it's like when you work for yourself, you have to like your boss. You have to. It's very important.
Exactly. So kind of shifting onto the next part of that, you're finally working on this goal of yours. So that way you can turn an idea into something tangible. What were some of the challenges you encountered as you were, you know, producing the album, really understanding that you're not just a musician now, you're an entrepreneur?
Yeah. Well, I learned early on the importance of networking. And fortunately for myself, when I was just kind of casually writing songs and playing a few live gigs here and there in Alaska, I had done a really good job of networking subconsciously. I didn't even know I was doing it, but I was doing it. I had a very talented producer named Peggy Monahan help me put the album together. We had my engineer, Kevin Barnett, who went to the Berklee School of Music in New England.
Oh, damn.
And and my arranger and my composer for the actual tracks themselves on the album, a guy named Carl Wilhelmi, was a guy who I took guitar lessons from. And this very small team of people who I had already built this network of helped me make this project possible. So networking is a huge piece. The other piece would be how important brand building is and how important marketing that brand is. And I learned very, very quickly the importance of social media in marketing these days. It got to the point where leading up to the release, I was doing 2 posts a week, then 3 posts a week, then 4 posts a week. Up to the day of the release, I was doing like 5 posts a week. And it was getting visibility. My followers were growing on social media. People were starting to ask me about it. Soldiers were coming up to me. Soldiers I didn't even work with were coming up to me. And at work and asking me, like, when's your album coming out? And I was like, November 2nd. And they're like, yeah, that's what I saw. But is it going to be available on this platform or that platform? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah. And it was really eye-opening to me. So that was definitely important.
That's remarkable to hear. So you finally get the album out. How long did it actually take to record and get through all the minutia of getting it together?
It's funny when I was waiting for you to get your computer up and running again, I actually looked at the time. We started production in June of 2018 and we finished production in September. That's 4 months, 13 songs, entirely self-produced and financed. That's almost unheard of. Now, granted, we weren't doing full band arrangements.
And you don't have to go through the bullshit of dealing with an agent.
Yeah, exactly. Like that. Yeah, exactly. And then so we finished production in September and we got it to the distributor like late September. And the distribution kind of takes a long time. You know, we wanted a release date of November 2nd. We had to get the material to the distributor like mid-September if we wanted to guarantee that kind of delivery. So that like it takes a fair amount of foresight. But what you said earlier was so important. I wanted to highlight that the idea that it's never been easier to be a creator than it is right now. The platform is out there. The audience is out there. And it has never been more convenient for the independent artist and the independent entrepreneur to get their word out. You just have to be diligent about it and dedicated to it.
And that's, you know, you hit it right on the spot. And I don't think enough people really emphasize that fact. But, you know, it's something I've really seen. And I've become a bit of an asshole since my book came out. So I'll admit this, like, I've become a bit of an asshole, but
yeah, you definitely seem a little bit more smug than I remember you.
Yeah, well, you know, life happens and stuff. But, you know, the one thing that really does bother me is when I get emails or phone calls, or I go to an event and, you know, people want, they're like, you know, how did you do this? How were you able to do this? I don't mind giving advice on things, mm-hmm. but then you have a lot of people that they want everything to be instantaneous. And what they don't understand is that the overnight success took years to come to.
Yeah.
And that this stuff just doesn't happen in a void.
No, absolutely not. I think one thing that is really lost on our generation is that we lose sight of what we can, accomplish. I'm sorry. Let me start over. We lose sight of what we can accomplish in the next 10 years because we are so focused on what we can get done in the next 10 minutes.
That's so true.
Yeah. Like we are so preoccupied with the end state that we forget the baby steps that we need to take to get there, you know? And so that would be one piece of advice. I think would be focus on the next 10 minutes, you know, the next 10 years are the next 10 years, but focus on the next 10 minutes. Those 50 meter targets are incredibly important and you have to prosecute those as best as you possibly can.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm not musically inclined. I mean, I was in a Korean orchestra, so I mean, that was about it, but I had to do that for high school. But, you know, I can only understand that if music is anything like writing, like I can only imagine the piles of paper you had just piling up with drafts that you didn't like and things that didn't go well.
I've got a file cabinet next to my desk right now, you know, filled with songs, 97% of which will never see the light of day. Like, it's part of the game, man, and it's an everyday thing. It is a daily thing. It is as habitual as working out in the gym or whatever routine you get yourself into. It has to be habitual. You have to get out there and you have to do the thing. Do the thing that you are trying to become. It's incredibly important.
Absolutely. Now, to kind of get to the fun part as mm-hmm. we begin to wrap up the show, it's November 2nd. Genesee County's finally out. What did that feel like to finally see something that you spent such a large amount of your time, your energy, your resources finally become something that you could push out into the world? What was that feeling?
So it was kind of surreal. I should clarify the album's title is actually Ever Higher. But my brand is Genesee Country.
I apologize for that. Yeah,
no, you got no worries. It's fine. And you know what? It's a note for me. I got to make sure I distinguish the two. it's all good, but, it was definitely surreal to get the order of 500, you know, we did a short order of physical copies, because CDs aren't really the preferred medium anymore, but, we got the CDs at my girlfriend's house in North Carolina, where I kind of like relocated to. And, it was surreal to open a box and just see like 500 of your name, your album, the jacket that you designed, the pictures that you took,
you designed the jacket.
Yeah. I designed the album artwork. I designed everything. This is all, it's all me, man. Like this whole project is all me. It's definitely surreal to hold a tangible body of your work. And no matter what anybody says about the project itself, whether good or bad, they can't take that away. They just can't. And it's so nerve-wracking. Like it was surreal and it was nerve-wracking at the same time, because you pick it up and you say, oh my God, it's real. And now it's real.
It sets in. There's no going back after that.
No, there's no going back. But it did teach me the importance of making sure that what you do put out into the world is of your best quality. Garth Brooks once said that when he does a new album, his producer will always get the CD with scratches on it because he can't let go of it. Right. and there's a lot of truth in that, because you have to make sure that when you attach your name to something, your name to a product, it has to be the best product, because once it's out there, there's no changing it. Like, I could do a remaster of this album, you know, a few years from now, but the original is still out there. And I definitely learned the importance of being sure that the quality of what you put out is of your best effort.
Absolutely. So as we start kind of wrapping up the show, one big thing that I really want to emphasize, especially to all the entrepreneurs out there, is once you complete a giant goal, once you hit a project, once you get to that point, there's always the next part, because the part, mm-hmm. you know, being an entrepreneur, being an artist is a lifestyle.
Right.
And, you know, your album Ever Higher is a true testament to that. So the album's out. What's going on? What's your next goal? What's that next Mount Everest that you want to go ahead and climb for yourself?
Yeah.
Whether it's career wise or even just personally.
Sure, sure. So the last, believe it or not, you know, the album came out on November 2nd. The last 2 months have been pretty chaotic for us. You know, we moved into a new house just outside of Charlotte. My household goods just got here last week from Alaska. So it's like we've had to move into a house twice. It's been pretty chaotic. However, I have been networking my ass off for the last 3-4 weeks that we've been living in Charlotte. Local pubs, local coffee shops, local restaurants, dropping off business cards, picking up business cards. I've got a long Excel document on my computer of all of the people that I've met and the venues that they work at. I am still building that list of venues. And moving forward, the important thing to remember for anybody, you know, once you achieve that first step, start thinking about the next one. And when I was getting ready to get out of the Army, I started putting together my 1-year goals, my 3-year goals, my 5-year goals, my 10-year goals. Like, I've got PowerPoints on my computer. You know, it's a typical Army officer. Like, I got all my PowerPoints. Super cool.
I'm a PowerPoint Ranger.
Yeah, exactly.
Which comes to, you know, people make fun of that, but it really does pay off in the civilian sector.
It really
just
does.
Saying.
Yeah. But so the next step is to start checking off those blocks, you know, setting smart, measurable, attainable, and time delineated goals for yourself to achieve. And the most important thing is measurable. I'm sorry, attainable. Like, that's the most important aspect of any goal. And so that's kind of like the next step. Now, specifically for me, it's just going to be playing the local circuits in Charlotte because nobody knows me here. But 10 years from now, I want to be in Nashville. I want to be operating pretty in a dedicated fashion in Nashville. And I've already set myself up for success in that, because I made sure that when I transitioned into the reserves, my reserve unit is a public affairs unit out of Nashville.
Oh, so
once a month, the Army is going to be sending me to Nashville. And because I am focusing exclusively on my music, I can choose when I come back from Nashville. I can go to Nashville for drill and stay there for a week, network, meet people. And I've already got a few meetings set up for next month with people in Nashville, to start talking with them about my vision for this record label that I started and everything. So the important thing is to give yourself measurable goals 1 year out, 3 years out, 5 years out, 10 years out, and just start knocking off the blocks.
Beautiful. So Matt, we're gonna go ahead and wrap up the show. Final question. If mm-hmm. you could speak to your 18-year-old self and give yourself one piece of solid advice, what would that be?
Be kinder than necessary to everyone, because you don't know who is going to be the next big name in the music industry. You don't know who is going to be the next huge promoter. You don't know who's going to be the next president. You don't know. And you should be kind to everybody, because one, it's just the right thing to do and it makes you feel better. But never burn a bridge if you can help it. And I have burned a couple. And I regret a couple. But I think that is the most important thing, is never burn a bridge and be kind and respectful to everyone.
Folks, the album is Ever Higher by Matt Conroy. You can go ahead and pick up a physical edition on his website. What's the web address, Matt?
Yeah, the website is www.mattconroy.site, S-I-T-E.
Perfect. And you can go ahead and pick it up. And please leave a rating and review on iTunes. It's also on Google Play.
Yeah, it's on everything. It's on Spotify. It's on Google Play. Tidal, you know, whoever listens to Tidal out there, it's on there, but it's on everything.
So, worldwide. Folks, no one has an excuse not to go ahead and check out a song or two. I believe you're going to love it. Matt, if people want to go ahead and link up with you on social media, all that stuff, where how could they do so?
Yeah, so I'm on all the social media platforms. The one I use the most is probably Instagram, and it's just Matt_Conroy_music. That's probably the best one, but I'm also on Facebook, facebook.com/Matt Conroy Music. You can find me on there.
Perfect. Well, Matt, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down and have this conversation with us. It's great to catch up with you.
Yeah, hell yeah, man. It's really good to catch up with you as well.
Yeah, it's great to see your giant Chris Hemsworth beard, and you know, just to see that you're doing great. And you know, I'll always support you in whatever you're doing, because I want to see this growth in people. You know, and folks, this is gonna be my final send off to you. You gotta go ahead and put good vibes out into the world. And I understand that sounds like some Bob Marley shit, but you know, whether you're like me and you're a Christian, or you just believe in some force out there, if you just believe in the freaking philosophy of Star Wars, here's this: we don't live in a void. Everything we do impacts each other. Love is better than hate. And if you go ahead and you create, if you produce, if you put out amazing things into the world is going to reward you back. The struggle is worth it, and the path that's hard is the one worth taking. As always, I'm Remso W. Martinez. Go ahead and leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, and hey, go ahead and check out all the amazing things that we have to offer from our guests at my website, rwmartinez.com. That's rwmartinez.com. And I'll see you when we come back. This has been a great first episode. We had amazing guests and we had a phenomenal discussion. So we'll be back in February with a whole slot of guests and other topics discussing how to live intentionally, how to put more into the world than you take, and how to live the best life you possibly can. I'm Remso W. Martinez with the Remso Martinez Experience. Good night, America.